I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 29th of October. This hour, with now just 6 days until the midterm election, which party will control the Senate for the next 2 years? Many longtime political analysts are looking at a likely range of Republicans gaining 5 to 8 seats. Two races are likely to go to runoffs. Will this possibly be a wave election similar to 2010, or are many races so close with Republicans struggling to pull away from their Democratic opponents that Republicans may not pick up many seats? We're going to talk about that the first hour of our program today. There also was a Marquette University poll, and the results of that poll are being analyzed right now. Marquette Law School released its final poll before the election for the gubernatorial race in our state. Among likely voters, Scott Walker leads 50% to 43%. Among registered voters, Walker leads Burke by 1 point, 46 to 45%. We'll give you a chance to respond to that the second hour of our program, although we'll certainly ask Jennifer Duffy about that, but a focus on Wisconsin, hour two of our show today. Jennifer is senior editor for the Cook Political Report. She is responsible for U.S. Senate and governor's races. The Cook Political Report has been around since 1984, and she has 26 years of experience in campaign politics. The last 23 have focused on nonpartisan political analysis. She joined the Cook Political Report in 1988, has served as an off-air analyst for NBC News on election nights from 96 to 2012, and she has been called one of the 13 savviest political analysts in the country. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Jennifer. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Jennifer Duffy, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, great to have you here. So let's look at the national picture for the Senate. Would you agree with many analysts who are saying 5 to 8, or do you think this could be closer to 2010, or what do you think?
Well, no, it's interesting. We have about 9 races out there right now that are within a couple of points. I mean, pretty consistently within a couple of points. My own personal view has been 5 to 7.
Mm-hmm.
I think 8's hard. But the most interesting part is we may not know the answer for a while.
Because of these probable runoffs, right?
Well, exactly. I mean, Louisiana will happen for certain. Georgia is now a very distinct possibility. And then you've got a third factor out there. If Democrats were to win the Senate race in Kansas, well, it's not Democrats, frankly. It's an independent candidate.
Right.
Who says that he will not decide which party to caucus with until he knows who's in the majority. So we're gonna wait a while.
So what's going on in Kansas? What's the story with that race?
It's not just that race. It's the governor's race, too. So something really is going on in Kansas.
Right, yeah. In addition to the World Series.
To the World Series, which apparently has made things very interesting for people to working in these races.
Really?
You know, when games are on, voters tune out.
Right.
They don't want phone calls. They don't want anybody knocking at their door. So in the Senate race, you've got a longtime incumbent, Pat Roberts. He's only been in the Senate since 1996, but he served in the House before that. He actually started his career on a Senate staff and served as a chief of staff to a senator. So he's been in Washington a long time. The Democrat dropped out. You have a well-funded independent candidate, Greg Orman, whose message is pretty simple. Let's stop attacking each other and start dealing with the country's problems.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, I think he was probably ahead of Roberts 10 points. I think the Republicans have brought that race back to even. But it's about turnout, and that's going to be impacted by the governor's race.
Mm-hmm.
So Governor Sam Brownback is seeking a second term. When he was elected, he started to put forward a very conservative agenda that included things like pretty hefty tax cuts, except where was the revenue to make up for those tax cuts? The state now is running a substantial deficit. It's beginning to hurt schools. And there's a little bit of a revolt in Kansas among moderate or more establishment Republicans. Back in June, 100 elected officials, and this ranges from dog catcher to state senator, actually endorsed the Democrat in the governor's race.
It's interesting. Now, this is the state, isn't it, where a lot of people are putting education front and center. I've read that a lot of rural schools have closed, and people
right.
are really concerned about this dramatic cutback in education.
Exactly. You know, it all, you know, tax cuts are a great idea if you can tell people where the revenue comes from, which did not happen in Kansas. And so, you know, what gets hit first? Services. And education apparently has been hit very hard in Kansas, and you've got a lot of upset voters.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to New Hampshire for a moment, which is also a very interesting race. From what I've read, former Massachusetts Senator Scott Brown has closed the gap pretty substantially with the incumbent, Jean Shaheen. It's getting a lot of national attention. Chuck Todd narrated the debate last night. They have another debate coming up on Thursday. Do you think that she will get a victory here, or could this go Scott Brown's way?
Well, you know what? It's going to tell us a lot. Regardless of what happens, this has been a very quiet race. You know, as you remember, Scott Brown, until the end of 2012, actually represented Massachusetts in
right.
the United States Senate.
Yeah.
He moved, although it wasn't a big move. and it's been a much quieter race than his Senate race against Elizabeth Warren. I think, frankly, that was partly by design. Because that Senate race in Massachusetts turned into something of a three-ring circus. But one of two things are happening here, and it's important to figure out which one. One, is this just the natural closure of a race in a competitive two-party state? Maybe. But it also may be a sign that there's a bit of a wave building in New Hampshire. New Hampshire seems unusually sensitive to the national political environment. When we look at the first congressional district, for example, that district has flipped three times in four elections.
Oh, my.
You've seen big changes in the state legislature in the last three out of four elections. So we might be seeing that. Polls in New Hampshire close early. We're going to start seeing results fairly early. And if Scott Brown were to win this race, I think we're looking at a very rough night for Democrats.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about some of the issues that have been very much in the news, and certainly there have been politics at play. Ebola, I understand that came up in last night's debate in New Hampshire. ISIS, there are just a number of issues that have been terrorism in Canada creating fear, creating concern. How many of these races, these Senate races, have those issues as a focal point? And do you think that they will be very important as people vote?
Well, they have played in a lot of states, various issues. They don't all play. But I tend to look at these issues more in this context. And it's, I call it the competency basket, for lack of a better word.
Mm-hmm.
It starts with Benghazi and throw in the Bergdahl prisoner swap and the IRS scandal and the Veterans Healthcare scandal and the Secret Service scandal. There are a couple of other things that belong in this pile. Unaccompanied minors at the border,
mm-hmm.
Things like mm-hmm. that. And Ebola is, you know, ISIS and Ebola are the last two issues in the basket. I don't think in polling shows, you know, has shown pretty decisively that most Americans don't believe they're going to get Ebola
mm-hmm.
or that somebody they know will get it. This is what they're worried about. They're worried about if there is a real outbreak in this country, if the government is prepared to handle it. And they tend to think it's not. And this is the feeling created by all the issues in this competence basket,
mm-hmm.
that government isn't showing voters that it's competent.
And so that I'm wondering, in all of these races, is there a strong anti-Obama sentiment? Is it the focus of ads? Does it work as a campaign issue? Does it explain why people have been reluctant to have the president come and share the stage?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the one thing you have to remember about these Senate races, especially the most competitive seats, they tend to be states that Mitt Romney won, and not by a little, but by a lot.
Interesting.
So you're seeing Republicans use the president quite a bit, mm-hmm. whether it's how much an incumbent voted with his position on any issue, or going at specific issues. Health care reform is still out there as an issue. And you're seeing Democrats very actively distance themselves from the president.
Yesterday, the president came to Milwaukee to campaign for the Democratic challenger, Mary Burke, in the gubernatorial race, Governor Walker and Mary Burke. I was wondering what kind of strategy, if you thought, and now today, although it was a poll that was conducted, I believe, last Friday until Sunday, showing that among likely voters, the governor of the state now has a 7-point advantage, which is quite an increase from some of the earlier polls. Does it make sense?
Yes, like all of them.
Yeah, like all of them. I'd like to hear your response to that. And was it a wise idea? He was in a heavily African-American part of the city of Milwaukee at an African-American, for the most part, high school. Was it a good strategy? And the Democratic candidate, interestingly, hasn't been wholeheartedly endorsing Obama. She's kind of stepped back from him. But does that strategy work in what the Democrats will need to have a big turnout election?
It can certainly work. Interestingly enough, the president has done very little campaigning. He's gone to Michigan. He's gone to Illinois. Now it's Wisconsin. He had a couple of other trips on his schedule that were mostly official business that ended up getting canceled because of the Ebola situation. But I think it's a risky strategy. One, it tells me that the Democrats really do feel that they need to do something to sort of rev up their turnout, and especially among African Americans. On the other hand, having the president in the state can also energize some Republicans. He sort of serves as a reminder of what they're unhappy about in government. So I think that Democrats took it as a calculated risk.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at midterm elections, the composition of the electorate is very different than it is in a presidential election. It's whiter, it's older, it's slightly more educated, it's a little bit more conservative with a small C, not a big C, and it tends to be a little wealthier. And so what you're looking at with drop-off voters are the millennials, women, particularly single women, and African Americans and Hispanics. So what Democrats are trying to do is fix that, to change that in a way nobody's ever been able to do before.
Mm-hmm.
And the president's part of that effort.
Yeah. And I know this poll has just come out, but do you have a response to a poll showing that Scott Walker is now among likely voters ahead by 7 points? And when you look at the percentage, the number of Republicans who are likely to vote for him, it's about 10 points higher than Democrats saying they're likely to vote for Mary Burke.
You know, it is interesting. I want to see. I haven't gotten my hands on the questionnaire yet.
Yeah, and it hasn't been released. I know.
How are the two third party candidates doing? There's only 7. You know, it's 50-43. So in that 7% has to account for whatever support the two third party candidates are getting, and whoever is left in undecided. That seems like a small number to me.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, now the third-party candidates kind of cancel each other out. you know, you've got a libertarian and you've got another candidate who seems more on the liberal end of the spectrum. So that the number seems small. You know, likely voter screens are a very tough thing. However, you know, anecdotally, I also sense Republicans feeling a little bit better about this race than they did a couple weeks ago. So I'm not going to say it's wrong, but I want to see it replicated.
We're going to be welcoming phone calls for Jennifer. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Jennifer Duffy is senior editor for the Cook Political Report, responsible for U.S. Senate and governor's races. She has been with them for a long time. She has 26 years of experience in campaign politics, and she has been an off-air analyst for NBC News for a number of years. As well. As we get very close to the elections, we have spent a bit of time talking about the gubernatorial race, and she certainly, although this poll has just been released, she certainly has been following that race. But also, we've been following a number of races because it will be interesting to see what happens to the U.S. Senate. Are Republicans starting to move ahead, or are there indications that these polls are still kind of close and Republicans, at least nationally, are concerned about whether they'll get the number of seats needed to take control of the Senate? Most analysts believe they will. The question is, by how much? And then the further question is, what happens to governance then? You know, are we going to be able to have people sit down and talk to each other about issues of the day? Here is, I gave you the phone number. Let me tell you, you are welcome to call in. We've been covering a lot of the other interesting races, and I know you who are particularly interested in politics will want information on what's going on in Iowa, certainly. The Georgia race is very interesting. Senate races. The Colorado Senate race is interesting. New Hampshire, we've touched on. Louisiana and Kentucky as well. So we'll talk about all of those and more and welcome your calls. 800-486-8655 is the number. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the midterm elections, the chances of Republicans picking up enough seats, Senate seats, for the Senate to go Republican. Some very interesting races all over the country. We're looking at the issues that have become a part of the race, and I think that our guest has a fine analysis of this, that government competence in various forms is front and center on the ballot. Here's how you reach our conversation, 800-486-8655. There may be races that you've been looking at very carefully that you will think will be, as Jennifer will tell us, an indication of how the night is going to go, what we should look at early on. If certain states go Republican, if they go Democratic, what is the likelihood that others will follow suit? So we have phone lines certainly open for you. Let's go to the Iowa race for a moment. It's really an interesting race, isn't it? And it's been, the Republican has pulled up the numbers. She's an interesting candidate. He is. They're very different on a whole lot of issues. Can you concentrate on that race for a moment?
Sure. It's true. Voters in Iowa don't have to wonder about where these candidates stand.
Right.
which is kind of refreshing for a lot of the toss-up races I'm looking at right now. So you have a congressman, the Democrat, Bruce Braley. You know, he got off to a bit of a rough start in the campaign. He made a couple of unforced errors that have followed him around. The Republican is a state senator, Joni Ernst, who has not stopped surprising even Republican strategist here.
Really?
She wasn't supposed to win the primary, but she did with 56%. It was a very crowded primary. She was supposed to be the underdog in this race, and she has stayed even slightly ahead. Here are the two things she faces in the final days, though. One, Democrats have a very good ground game in Iowa and have had that for a long time. And in a race this close, the ground game can make the difference.
Hmm.
The second thing is, there is a glass ceiling in Iowa. Iowa has never sent a woman to the United States Congress,
mm-hmm.
nor have they elected one as governor. So there's a ceiling there that that Ernst is trying to break. And for that reason, she doesn't talk about that she'd be the first. She would also, if elected, be the first woman combat veteran to serve in the Senate.
Interesting. Let's go to Nancy in Madison for our first caller for you. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Kathleen. I don't know, should I be hanging up on the phone? Or
should you hang up?
Oh, no, okay. All right. Sometimes you tell people to hang up.
Oh, no. No, go right ahead.
Okay. So I got a call Friday, fellow saying he was polling for Marquette University poll, and it turned into a push poll. He disagreed with what I was saying about Walker and was, like, trying to argue with my positions, and then I kept on, and he hung up on me. And the next day, the next morning, somebody called again saying they were from Marquette University. I said, wait a minute, I got a call last night, and it sounded like a push poll to me. He didn't like my views, and then he hung up on me. I just think that this is so weird. The second guy apologized, said the guy isn't going to pull for us anymore. But I think, are we supposed to believe pollsters, you know, or polling results when this is the kind of stuff that's happening? I don't know.
Did you actually believe, though? I mean, the Marquette poll is quite reputable. Did you actually believe they were from the poll?
Yeah. You know, this guy who called again, you know, he actually gave me at least his name and a number to call back.
I see.
So I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I would call the number back if you had those kind of thoughts. I mean, let's talk about polling for a moment. And there are people who are probably not affiliated with legitimate polling firms who are making phone calls these days. What do you think about polling? Are there polls that you trust, Jennifer, or do you look at a combination of all the polls to give us a sense of where we are?
Well, you know, unfortunately, every cycle we get more bad polling and less good polling.
Really?
The caller is interesting because her first clue is a professional interviewer would never have responded to her in any way.
No, of course
they
not.
They would just keep going through the questionnaire.
Right.
So somebody's having a little fun out there doing that. And usually, I don't know how Marquette does it, but usually they won't identify the sponsor. They'll just identify the call center,
mm-hmm.
you know, because most good polls use professional call centers to do their questionnaires, and they tend to be in places like Utah and Las Vegas and places where they say they're accent neutral. So I do a couple of things. Yes, I have my favorites, but even one that I've been able to rely on in the past, I can't rely on this cycle because the one thing I've discovered is their sample is much too Republican.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not getting great results in places. I also have the benefit of seeing some of the party's polls as long as I don't write about them. And so that sort of gives me a guide. And I use some trend lines. Huffington Post has something called Huff Pollster.
Mm-hmm.
Which does a very, very interesting trend lines. It's run by a pollster. They actually know what they're doing, and I tend to rely on them for the overall trend.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Nancy, very much for your call. Let's go to John in Madison next. Hey, John.
No, hi, Kathleen. Hey, thanks again. I'm sitting here listening to all this, and I can't help but had this thought more than one occasion that there's got to be a correlation here with this, you know, our widening gap, richest to poorest in this country, and the jump to that people that vote, they're not trusting of our expert class, our decision-making class, our leadership class, the people that really will make the decisions, that you know, critical thinking skills on the voters' part are just so lacking. And I don't mean to talk down to people, but this is how elections are won and lost. And wondering if this isn't part of just this larger problem of this widening separation of education and access to money in the country.
And how should, do you think, critical thinking be at play, John, in an election? How should we inform ourselves?
Well, we rely on the media, but that's a great question. I think that our educational system probably needs a hard overhaul. I think that the way that students are prepared to live and function in the world that we live in now is they're being underserved. And, you know, this Socratic method of teaching, which has been lost, I think is lending to that this inability to critically think and find out for ourselves what we think is best for the good of everybody out there, not just ourselves individually.
Thank you, John, for your call. Jennifer.
Well, you know, I'm not sure that it's an education problem or a skill set problem. As much as I feel that more and more Americans feel very disconnected to government, that mm-hmm. they don't think that government impacts their lives in any meaningful way. And this is especially true of the federal government. You know, when you get to state government, things are a little bit better. And so I think it's this disconnect, you know, what does government do for me? How do they help me? I think that is a big part of the problem.
Thanks so much, John, for the call. It is pretty incredible when you think about, Jennifer, that we have fairly large, even there, though, it's not as large as it should be, turnout for presidential elections. And yet we're looking at numbers for this election 6 days from now, and they're incredibly important elections. I mean, it's the Senate, it's the House, it's gubernatorial races, and people just don't feel as though they need to go out and vote. They don't vote. I find that appalling.
Right, and it's because they don't have an appreciation for what's at stake, that the party that controls the United States Congress matters.
Right.
So there is an enormous drop-off.
Yeah. All right, let's go to some other races. You mentioned the race in Georgia, which is an interesting one and appears to be pretty much a toss-up right now. Can you tell me about the candidates? I have read that the Republican candidate, it should have been his to win, but he hasn't done well by himself.
No, he hasn't. And this was pretty evident to me in the primary where he made a couple of big errors. But, right, the Republican is David Perdue. He's a businessman. He has headed some big companies, like Reebok and Pillowtex. He's sort of a fixer, goes in and tries to help troubled companies. A couple of weeks ago, it was revealed that he had given a deposition in a lawsuit several years ago, in which he said that yes, most of his career had been focused on outsourcing.
Ooh,
that's a tough issue in Georgia.
Yeah,
that's lost 18% of its manufacturing jobs over the last decade. And has had, and it's not that this issue's come up, but he hasn't responded to it very well. Eventually, his last shot at it was to blame the media for its inability to describe how free enterprise works. The Democrat is, I think, has proven to be maybe the best Democratic challenger of the cycle. Her name is Michelle Nunn. She was the CEO of the Points of Light Foundation, which is former President George H.W. Bush's foundation that he started as president, the whole notion of 1,000 points of light. And her father, Sam Nunn, was in the Senate for a number of years, moderate Southern Democrat. She has been a more moderate candidate. But she has run a very good race, and she has taken advantage of the opening David Perdue has given her. So that race that Perdue had the lead in for much of the general election has closed. The polls are bouncing back and forth, but it's really only 2 points in either direction.
Mm-hmm. North Carolina, is he going to pull that off?
You know, there is yet another race that looked like it was done. It looked like
it's not.
Reagan had sealed the deal. She had a small but pretty stable lead in polling. This is one of these races where Ebola is playing a role.
Really?
And between Ebola, ISIS, and then some questions about stimulus funds that her husband's company was awarded, that race has closed back up and is now looking pretty even. Again, this is like New Hampshire. I think in the toss-up column right now, the two hardest races for Republicans to win are North Carolina and New Hampshire. So if you see one of them go on election night, I think you can be pretty assured that Republicans will walk away with the majority.
Interesting. And how does Ebola play in these? Is it a matter of, I'm for quarantining people who are returning from West Africa and the president hasn't been on top of this, or we need to have a travel ban? I mean, how does it play into a political discussion?
A little bit of both, but a lot of it is preparedness. A lot of it is whether the government is ready to deal with it. Have they devoted the funds, et cetera? It doesn't hit so hard on things like travel bans and quarantines. And I really haven't seen it play much in paid advertising.
Mm-hmm.
It's mostly in stump speeches, candidate statements, that sort of thing. I mean, one of the reasons it's playing at all in North Carolina is that Hagan refuses to take a position. She refuses to say whether she supports what the president has done or whether he's done enough or her position on a travel ban. She was kind of against it, then she was for it, then she was against it. So she's given Republicans that opening.
Right. Well, let's talk about that for a moment, because it seems to me as though there's a lot of that going on in politics these days. Maybe I'm just old-fashioned, but I don't care if somebody's ideas might be different than what mine are. I'd really like to have people be forthright, not to be, walking away from things, but to let you know, to be present, to be engaged in various issues and have opinions on various issues. And it seems to me as though we've got so many races going on now in the country where you don't have a lot of that. I don't quite get it.
Well, I think candidates have gotten very afraid of taking solid positions.
Right. Yeah.
The opposition picks them apart.
Mm-hmm.
They look for that little. I mean, if you're a candidate and you say something to the effect of, "We need to make sure Social Security and Medicare are on solid fiscal footing and are there for generations to come," a Democrat takes that statement and turns it into, "You favor privatizing Social Security and cutting Medicare."
Right.
Which is not at all what you said.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the way it comes out. So, yes, I think that people have gotten very reticent to put out very specific positions. And the one place where I think it's a problem for voters right now is in that race in Kansas, where the independent candidate is not taking very solid positions on much. Yes, immigration, we have to do something about it. Well, what do we have to do? Well, we've got to work that out.
Oh, for heaven's sake. And this person is doing very well, thank you.
Now, this person favors a path to citizenship, with penalties paid and back taxes and things like that. But he says that's not amnesty. Well, except that is the Republican definition of amnesty.
Right.
So who knows?
And for somebody to say they're not sure who they would caucus with, I mean, wouldn't you have a lot of questions as you're going into the polling place? Well, I'm not sure who this person is or who they'll align themselves with, but I'm for him.
Yeah, he says he will do what's best for Kansas.
Ah, you're right.
I suspect that he would like to be the one who decided which party was in the minority or in the majority. However, he told Chuck Todd of NBC News last week something interesting, that he wouldn't caucus with Republicans if Mitch McConnell were still the leader, and he wouldn't caucus with Democrats if Harry Reid were still the leader. The question he wouldn't answer was, well, what are you going to do if they're both still there, which is the likely scenario.
Exactly. Oh, more phone calls in a moment. We have to talk about the Kentucky race. Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Allison Grimes, the challenger, who refused to say whether or not she voted for Obama after she had been asked repeatedly where that race is. It would appear to me that McConnell will pull this off. But it's been an interesting race, tougher than people thought it was going to be. We'll look at where the numbers are coming from for Mitch McConnell and for her. Colorado, the incumbent Senator Mark Udall has fallen behind, and we'll look at that race and others that you may want to center on. Here's how you reach our conversation, 800-486-8655. Jennifer Duffy is our guest. Jennifer is senior editor for the Cook Political Report. She is responsible for U.S. Senate and governor's races. The report has been around since 1984 and provides analysis of presidential, U.S. Senate, House, and gubernatorial races. And she is also off-air analyst for NBC News on election night. So that's what she'll be doing next Tuesday night. We've been looking at Senate races, the Marquette University poll looking at the gubernatorial race here in the state of Wisconsin was just released, and the numbers are quite a bit different than they were 2 weeks ago when Marquette had its last poll. It now shows a 7-point lead for Governor Scott Walker among likely voters. We'll have a chance the second hour of our program today for you to tell you the truth. What happened is at noon, our second hour guest wasn't able to join us today. So we decided, with so much attention on the midterms, we're just going to ask you a couple questions about what's going on in Wisconsin and what's going on in nationally, because you're a politically minded audience and we'd like to hear from you. So we'll just talk about all of that hour two. But to you, for more phone calls for Jennifer, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org, Facebook page The Kathleen Dunn Show. Like us while you're there, and you can get updates on upcoming shows, and Twitter at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 800-486-8655 is our number. We'll be talking about the latest poll here in Wisconsin, gubernatorial race, and asking you what issues will be motivating you as you go to the polls next Tuesday. We also will have you respond to what you think about what will be happening nationally. Let's take care of a couple more races before we go back to phone calls, Jennifer. Kentucky. It's been an interesting race. It's been back and forth. It looks as though in the 6 days before that Mitch McConnell will pull this off.
Yes, I think that McConnell is pretty well positioned to win re-election. And the polls told me one thing, but they put two ads up yesterday that told me that they were feeling pretty good about where they were. They were very positive ads. One was a little goofy and harkened back to an ad from his very first campaign in 1984 called Bloodhound. So if they felt comfortable enough to put those spots up, then they like where they are. I think that Allison Grimes has been a good but far from perfect candidate. She's made a number of unforced errors. You alluded to one of them, refusing to answer who she voted for.
Right.
Why she wasn't prepared for that question absolutely boggles the mind, because mm-hmm. It's a pretty obvious one.
Yeah, I mean, I think you were the one who said this. All she had to say was, I'm a Democrat. I've been a Democrat. I voted for the president.
Well, exactly. I mean, I sort of feel that there are a number of issues that if you're a Democrat running in a red state, that you can't do your announcement without having answers for.
Right.
That's one of them.
Right. Absolutely. It's a basic one. Bill in Fort Atkinson. Hi.
Hi there.
Hi, Bill. Good. Bill, how are you?
I am good. Good.
Good. Good.
I'm going to go back to John, a caller who said he felt education for the students wasn't serving them properly and not preparing them on how to deal themselves engage in government. And your guest kind of swept that aside. And it does seem to me that that would be an excellent avenue to prepare the young people and the public for engaging with government.
Jennifer. I'm sorry. Are you done, Bill?
Bill? I'm here.
No. Yeah. I just wanted you to be able to finish your comments. Did you?
I just want to know why you think education isn't a good avenue to prepare students for engaging with government and being involved.
Okay.
Well, one, I didn't intentionally sweep the education issue aside because, one, I am a big believer in education. But I think that we're talking about a couple of different things. I mean, yes, engaging students in civic activity in starting probably in grammar school is a great idea. However, I'm not sure that all of that would inspire them more to vote. And really, the great thing about our democracy is everybody's vote counts the same regardless of your IQ.
It's true. Thank you, Bill, very much for the call. I don't know if you wrote this or somebody else did, Jennifer, but I want to bring it up no matter what the case. If the Republicans win the Senate, somebody wrote, maybe you did, they're likely to keep it for only 2 years. They have the larger number of seats to defend in 2016. Did you write that? Do you agree with that?
But I'm certainly not the only one that's written that. The advantages Republicans have this time, mostly the map that favors them, with Democrats having to defend so many seats in red states, actually flips on them in 2016 and works against them. Remember, the cross-up in 2016 won in the very strong Republican year of 2010.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a number of incumbents who are in for very, very tough races. Some of them have already begun, believe it or not. And so I think it's fairly likely that they do lose their majority. But guess what? The tables turn again in 2018.
Oh, my gosh. Right.
Yes, but what we're looking at, and it may not be a bad thing at the end of the day, what we're looking at is 6 to 10 years of sort of instability in the Senate. That might actually be helpful.
Well, you have to wonder what kind of compromise, what kind of governance we're going to be able to have in this country for the next couple of years. Things are already pretty bad. People don't talk to each other. Nothing seems to happen. And now we're going to have, it would appear, if the Republicans do win, I don't know, maybe not, maybe you see it differently, 2 more years of even more intractability.
You know, I'm going to take the glass half full
part
of this equation, and realizing that my opinion is in the minority, not the majority. I actually think a Republican Senate provides the president with some opportunities.
Really?
He doesn't want his legacy to be 4 years of nothing getting done. He obviously has a little bit of a problem getting around the Democratic leadership in the Senate. But he probably could bring, Republican Senate leadership to the table to at least start talking about some things and try to work towards it. Will it be successful? I don't know, but I think the opportunity exists.
Let's go to Kathy next, our caller from Lac des Flambeaux. Hi, Kathy.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was noticing in the pictures of the Republicans out there using the color blue heavily. There's a picture of Governor Walker exiting a primarily blue-colored bus, and he's got his blue jeans on, and I think trying to reach the common working people in that way, but yet will not support raising the minimum wage to a living wage.
I must say I haven't noticed, I haven't noticed the colors very much. Do you have a comment, Jennifer?
Well, you know, I'm going to just assume that the governor looks better around blue than red or purple. Neither party has licensed these colors. They just kind of happened. I think maybe the media is partly to blame for the way that maps are presented. But, you know, the caller has a point. Governor Walker does not support raising the minimum wage right now. But I'm not sure there's any relation between his position and color.
Yeah. Thanks, Kathy, for the call. How many states will have, or maybe their municipalities, more of them, have minimum wage items on the ballot?
There are actually three or four that are looking at these issues on the ballot: Alaska, Illinois, Arkansas, among them. Actually, on our website, cookpolitical.com, that we have posted a chart. You have to, unfortunately, do a little bit of hunting for it. But it's actually a chart that lists all 145 measures on the ballots across the country.
Oh, my. Oh, that'll be interesting to look at. So tell us again, what do you look at? What if a certain states go Republican, then it's a good night. If certain states go Democratic, early things that are called, then it's a good night for Democrats.
Well, the one thing about working on a decision desk is that you really have to try and game this out when you can call the Senate. And I'm not sure. I really don't think it's going to be called in primetime.
Really?
One of the reasons is, one, we've got these runoffs. Two, we are probably not going to see the results in Alaska until midday Wednesday.
Hmm.
There are lots of votes that actually have to be flown to the Secretary of State's office. And both campaigns have put a very high premium on these Native Alaskan voters, these voters in very rural areas, and believe me, their definition of rural is a lot different than Wisconsin's or most other places. So this happened in 2008 as well, as we had to wait for those votes to be counted, and they didn't start counting them until Wednesday morning Alaska time. So we may not know. But the states I'm looking at early, I talked about them, New Hampshire, and North Carolina. If you see one of those states, if you see Republicans pick up one of those seats, I think that maybe Democrats are in for a long night. Now, here's the thing. They don't have to win either of them to get a majority.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. In Alaska, it would appear to be getting a little bit closer, according to news I was watching yesterday. Or not?
There are two states where the polling is so notoriously bad.
Really?
As to be useless.
Really? Oh, what are those?
Alaska and Hawaii.
Oh, interesting.
And so I tend to rely a little bit on party polling there. Dan Sullivan, the Republican, has been a couple of points ahead, but the Democrat, Senator Mark Begich, has one of the most aggressive and ambitious ground games out there. The question is, this is the first time in a very, very long time a Democrat has tried this in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
We're not sure it's going to work, no one can accuse Senator Begich of not doing every single thing he could to win this race.
All right. We have less than a minute, but we can get this in. Brian in Oshkosh.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, I really noticed something in terms of political ads. My wife and I were contemplating the idea of a peaceful 5th of November away from incessant pounding. But the Koch brothers have been running ads sometimes once every 15 minutes, PR about what a great job they're doing hiring people and so on in some parts of the day. Other times of the day, I've noticed that they run one ad every half hour, one ad every 45 minutes. How does that impact the election?
30 seconds, Jennifer.
Okay, I'm a little confused. Are you talking about Coke, the company, or the political ads they're doing?
I'm sure the political ads.
Well, you know what? Ad targeting is very much a science, and it depends what the viewers they want to reach are watching.
All right. Well, Jennifer, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us. Jennifer Duffy. Jennifer is senior editor for the Cook Political Report, and they've got all kinds of political information. If you're looking for other sites, you haven't been there, maybe you're already there, but it's a good place to go. She is responsible for the U.S. Senate and gubernatorial races. Organization has been around since 1984. She is also an off-air analyst for NBC News, so she'll be involved in making those decisions. Too early to call, too close to call, or the station decides to announce so-and-so is the winner. So we thank her for being with us. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour and to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. More election conversation coming up as we approach the midterm, so please stay with us because you will be our guests, hour two.